Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to be
I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse Opoyan.
Welcome to Rewind, Wisconsin Eye and WisPolitics.com's look at this week in the Capitol. To start, we have Wis Eye Was There. We have video of everything from Black History Month celebrations in the Capitol to Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson talking about her highway system and its funding problems to Assembly Speaker Robin Voss talking about the Supreme Court race. Wis Eye Was There.
You have to understand that racism is just as part of America as apple pie. Black people weren't included when the Constitution and all that was made, so we had to make our own way in this country through human rights. Going through what happened in Oshkosh taught me how to speak to power.
Invenergy is going to put 300 megawatts on some farmland. Can you think about solar farming instead of wheat farming?
Sure.
You know, could that be a way that we kind of revitalize a lot of very depressed economies? Mm-hmm. There's, you know, every day another dairy farm goes out of business.
We do not support easing sentences on offenders. Assembly Republicans support access to a fair trial, treatment alternatives for those who need them, and setting individuals up for success as they re-enter society.
How many times have you seen somebody go from private insurance to Medicaid and jump up and down and go, oh, yippee, I'm so excited to be on Medicaid? It doesn't happen.
We are here today to announce a reduction, a reintroduction of the Credit Care Act. The bill would create $1,000 tax credit to help those who act as caregivers.
It's estimated that the burden of dementia in general will double by 2060. And burden refers not only to prevalence of a condition, but the monetary and financial burden on families.
A motorist comes outside, there's a barnacle on their car. They call a phone number that is here. They're then told through our system what their fine is, what their release fee is. Once they've done that, they're given a four-digit code. They plug the code in, the barnacle is released.
What are the implications if the costs continue for the transportation budget if we just stay at the current one with no changes whatsoever?
If we stay at a base budget, we will continue to see the condition of our state highways deteriorate.
I'm going to vote for Brian Hagedorn. I think he is the best choice for the court. And I don't think that your faith should be a disqualifier because you actually hold to the tenets of what you believe, because I think you can separate that.
All right, Jesse. So in our line of work, I think of elections as like the Super Bowl, right?
Okay.
The one big event. To me, the budget is like the World Series. All right,
yeah.
So let's start sports. So we're game one is coming up with the budget introduction on Thursday, February 28th from Governor Evers. And we have hints of what's in there. So let's kind of talk about some of these things first. So Evers' budget will include steps toward increasing minimum wage. So we'll give you details about that.
Mm-hmm.
Restore some science positions at Department of Natural Resources. Again, no details. His education plan will be almost identical, quote unquote, to the $1.4 billion he proposed when he was DPI superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to look at transportation. There'll be some kind of revenue up, or not sure what yet.
Not a dollar, though.
Not a dollar, that's right. He'll include funding to complete some mega projects in southeastern Wisconsin, but he wants to move significant money to counties and municipalities for local roads. And then you wrote this week about the $28 million for funding for women's and infants' health. Can you talk about that piece that they announced this week?
Yeah, so the bulk of that proposal, the majority of the money included there, would go to expanding Medicaid coverage for women after they give birth. So right now, postpartum coverage, if you're on Medicaid, lasts for 60 days after birth, and this would expand that to a full year. So that's the most expensive part of that proposal. There are efforts in there to reduce infant mortality rates. He would look at creating an infant mortality prevention office within the Department of Health Services, bringing more funding into the Women's Health Block Grant, the Well Woman Program that do preventative screenings, cancer screenings, STI prevention efforts. So it's kind of a comprehensive, whether or not you become a mother as a woman, the health on the early end, the preventative end, end, all the way up to later in life, and then looking also at keeping babies healthy, keeping families healthy. The one potentially and inevitably controversial element of this is that he would also bring some federal funding eligibility back to Planned Parenthood that was taken away under Governor Walker.
So in talking to people about this budget, it's been interesting to hear Republicans be somewhat taken aback by the proposals, but at the same time, it's kind of clear to people that Tony Evers is a Democrat, and he is proposing a budget that a Democrat would propose. It's also repudiation of the 8 years of Scott Walker. Am I hearing the right things from people? Is that where you see things too?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you see perhaps he's not going as far as he could. You know, he talked about, and we'll talk about the marijuana proposals later, but he talked about sort of proposing something he thinks could potentially get done instead of going full on what he would like to do. I think he's probably doing some of that with this Women's Health Initiative too. He's not, you know, touching abortion laws necessarily in that, but he's looking at like a smaller funding stream. But these are unquestionably Democratic proposals, and this is not necessarily a meet in the middle effort.
No, and there are a couple things that will not be in the budget. He's already told us, like, he's not going to move toward phasing out vouchers. Obviously, with WEAC, who's been a big backer of Evers before, they're not a big fan of the school choice program. Evers has said in the campaign trail he had some issues with it, but he's not going to move toward phasing it out. He also is not going to, as you said, do a dollar increase in gas tax. But that, I think, is the one big mystery we have left of this budget, is how much of a gas tax hike are we going to see, or would there be other revenue streams including this proposal? What's your bet right now on what we're going to see?
That's a great question, and we're not getting a lot of hints. I mean, it does sound like there is going to be a gas tax increase. It doesn't sound like tolling is necessarily going to be part of this. That's something that Republican lawmakers have said that they're interested in, and I think Tony Evers said he's agnostic on it, which indicates to me he's probably not putting that in the budget. You know, Democrats in the past have not really been big fans of vehicle registration fee increases because they see that as a more regressive way to raise revenue. But, you know, will there be efforts to appease maybe Senate Republicans by trying to look for savings efforts in the DOT? I don't know. And I think we're still waiting on a lot of those details to come out of that task force.
I just, in the task force, I'm glad you brought that up because Evers keeps saying I'm waiting for the task force.
Yeah.
But we all kind of know he pointed the task force to justify putting revenue upper in the budget.
Right.
So I don't think if they come back and say, you're okay, Governor, he's going to say, okay, no gas tax hike.
Right.
But what I'm watching for are, you know, okay, size, nickel, dime, what's it look like? How much does that bring in compared to the middle-class income tax cut he wants to do? Can you justify it to Republicans as, okay, we're cutting this tax to raise this one? There are problems, obviously, in other areas with that, with his income tax cut we'll talk about later on. And two, I just never got the impression from Republicans last session they were there for a gas tax hike. Now, some Republicans did go on record saying, at leadership at least, they had his plan to cut income taxes and then raise the gas tax. But they never took that to a vote on the floor of the Assembly, and Senate Republicans didn't buy in. So do you think there's an appetite in either caucus, Republican caucus, to do a gas tax increase?
I don't think there's one in the Senate. Like you said, the Assembly has gotten close to it before. I think you might get a few people on board with it, but you'd have to have a lot of other concessions along with it, and I'm not sure that those are being offered.
So, and let's talk a little bit about that income tax cut that Evers wants, Republicans want, but they can't agree on how to do. We had Robin Voss at a luncheon this week for WispPolitics.com. He talked about it. So one, Evers, as expected, vetoes the income tax cut. Says, as he said all along, it's not funded, it's irresponsible, it should be in the budget. Republicans say, we're not going to do the Evers middle income tax cut because it relies on capping a tax on tax credit for manufacturers. That is irresponsible and will hurt job creators who then actually help the middle class. So is there a resolution for this?
Well, it doesn't seem like it right now. I think we're going to have this debate all over again in the budget because, like you said, the governor said he wants to have this conversation in there. But, you know, the proposal that he introduced when he was campaigning was tying this toward what he viewed as bringing in a giveaway to the wealthiest and transferring that back to the middle class. But, you know, Republicans are certainly saying we're trying to meet you halfway, but they're doing something that is not, there's no appetite for that with him, and I'm not quite sure how you get past that.
Well, it was fascinating to me in Robin's comments to her lunch, and where he's now even saying that maybe there won't be an income tax cut period in the budget. Mm-hmm. He's kind of upping the ante. We're also kind of watching will be a veto override, and during that luncheon he said it's too early to say yet. And when I talk to people about that possibly, they're like, well, if Robin does that and Fitzgerald, they put a second level of pressure on Democrats because Democrats maybe won't get a chance to vote on an income tax cut at all in this process. If you think about it, because they vote against the bill Republicans proposed. If they stay with Evers on the veto, they don't get to vote for it then. And then the budget, which I would be surprised, it's a bipartisan budget coming out of the legislature. Mm-hmm. Call me crazy. But if they don't vote for that budget and that tax cut's in there, there's no vote for any Democrat on for a middle income tax cut. Now, for most of them, not a problem. Patty Schottner, maybe, you know, she's going to be a top target for Republicans in 2020. Steve Doyle is the lone Republican in the Assembly who holds a GOP-leaning seat, but he seems to defy gravity at times with, mm-hmm. with his personal popularity. So I don't know what the end game is for Robin, but do you see a pressure on Democrats about this issue in the legislature right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you mentioned, some of those maybe tougher seats, there's pressure to not have an ad run against you that says you voted against cutting taxes for the middle class. At the same time, do Democrats this early in the session want to take a stand against a Democratic governor? I don't see that happening either.
Yeah, and Robin needs a Democrat, at least a few Democratic votes in both houses to get to his two-thirds majority to override it. So let's go listen to Robin Reynolds' own words from our luncheon this week with politics.com. I'll see the video now.
It is a preposterous position to take to say that the only increase in spending or the only reduction in taxes can be if there is a permanent new revenue source. So what he's saying is when his budget comes out, even though there's $1.8 billion in new revenue just because of the growing economy, it's not guaranteed that it's going to be there 2 years from now. I think for anybody who takes the time to really think about the position the governor has taken, it's not serious.
So is there going to be a veto override attempt?
Too early to tell. Anything that slides us closer to recreational marijuana is going to be a very difficult sell for those of us who believe that there could be a very limited use for people who suffer from a chronic condition to be able to access a different type of drug, which is what medical marijuana could be. But when you really look at the details and learn and understand, which is what a legislator's job is to do, it's a lot more complicated. So I now, unfortunately, my 40% number, which I honestly thought we could have gotten to 50, I think the number is more like 10%.
Okay, so more budget news this week. Corrections Secretary Carr testified for the State Senate Committee, talked about the problem of prison guards. We don't have enough prison guards in Wisconsin. We have overtime costs galore. And the way to fix that is to get more prison guards. He's talking about increasing the current starting salary of $16.30 an hour to about $22 an hour, which aligns with neighboring states, he says. Republicans have also talked about their public safety package. Mm-hmm. $50 million, light on the details, however. But they did say they want to do something to retain prison guards. But what's clear is that this is another piece of the budget where Evers is trying to address a problem that we have in Wisconsin prison guards and the overtime costs, but I'm not quite sure where they're going to be on that. Do you have any clue or anything you've seen so far what are the corrections?
Yeah, I haven't heard much about the details on the corrections officers. You know, I think a lot of the discussion about this has been, you know, there are problems at multiple levels. So you've got the issue with corrections officers. You've also got the issues with DAs, with court-appointed attorneys, with public defenders. Every level there's issues with pay and issues with compensation. So, in talking to Attorney General Josh Call not long ago, he kind of kept making the point that if there's a problem in one part of the criminal justice system, the whole system doesn't work as effectively as it can. And it sounds like this may be an area where we see some compromise across the aisle, but everyone's been pretty light on the details so far.
And that Republican outline, and I'll call it an outline because it's $50 million, but they didn't give us much beyond they want to increase the hourly rate. So if you're a private attorney who takes on a public defender case, you right now get $40 an hour. I believe it's the lowest, if not one of the lowest in the country.
It's the lowest, yeah.
They would go to $70 an hour. They want to add roughly 61 assistant district attorney positions in the state. Mm-hmm. Now, there are other things like they want to do drug and alcohol programs, more for those for prisoners, retain prison guards. But where that $50 million goes, I don't know. So, for example, in the fall, I wrote about a joint effort of the public defenders, the DAs, assistant DAs, the court system to do this, address all these things.
Right.
Pay progressions for public defenders and assistant DAs, more ADA positions, more money for the courts to increase that reimbursement rate. That package is like $70 million. So now we're at $50 million, plus we're adding in a few things along lines of, you know, these programs for prisoners. They don't know how it all plays out yet, and they're not going to give us any numbers. My impression is this is like a marker for Republicans more than it is here's the actual proposal. Is that?
Yeah, I think so, because I think if you look at the cost of, like you said, those 61 positions and upping that reimbursement rate for the private attorneys, that alone takes up a pretty good chunk of that $50 million. And so how much then is left for the pay progression and those TAD programs that you mentioned? It seems like maybe this is the starting point, and this goes into negotiations from there. And they were asking for Tony Evers to include that in his budget. So I don't know what we haven't really heard from him what his plan is for that.
It seems like especially some of the Republicans want to get out in front of Evers on a few things with budget proposals to kind of make their own mark. Is that what you mean? We had homeless grants this week. We have this. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, they did that with the middle class tax cut. They've done that with homelessness, like you mentioned. And that's an effort that they've been working on at least since last session. But I think with this criminal justice reform, these are things that in theory Democrats are on board with. But instead of looking to see what Tony Evers includes in his budget, Assembly Republicans are getting out on everything. And they're doing it not just in Madison or Milwaukee, but they're doing these press conferences simultaneously throughout the state. So they're taking the message statewide.
It's like they're getting a PR campaign out there.
Yeah.
All right. So the other big thing, actually one of the things we have the most details on, it seems like, is the marijuana proposal from Tony Evers for this budget. So let's talk about that. And actually, let's hear from Evers to kind of introduce this segment, what he said about his marijuana proposal in the budget this week.
For many Wisconsinites, things like medical marijuana or other products like CBD oil can help alleviate chronic pain from debilitating medical conditions, reduce symptoms for things like anxiety, and help folks cope with things like PTSD. I believe, and I know the people of Wisconsin overwhelmingly believe, that people shouldn't be treated like criminals for accessing medicine that can change or maybe even save their lives. It's time for Wisconsin to join the more than 30 other states in legalizing medical marijuana and ensuring access to CBD oil in Wisconsin.
All right, Jesse, why is Tony Evers making a stand on pot? Any guesses on this?
It's popular.
Very good point.
I think it's almost 60% of voters support full legalization of marijuana at this point, looking at the latest Marquette poll. But, you know, this is something Democrats have been working on for a pretty long time, trying to get to at least medical marijuana. And that's something that, again, in theory, Republicans might be willing to compromise on. It's sort of the rest of the details in that package that caused some issues.
Well, in that, you know, we heard from Robin before from our luncheon talking about marijuana that dropped the chances from 50, or it could have gotten to 50, now it's down to 10. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, Senator George Scott Fitzgerald has said over and over again he does not support medical marijuana. He's not there. So I think the chances are closer to zero that anything's going to get done, no matter what Tony Evers was going to do. And that's because the Senate just isn't there. Republican caucus just isn't there.
Yep.
That said, I get the impression that part of what Evers is doing is he has this message on criminal justice reform, right? And it is appealing to a certain segment of voters, especially in Milwaukee. African Americans who have dealt with the issues of what they see as unfair penalties for marijuana, there's a message being sent that he is in tune to their concerns. They, I've talked to a few folks from the African American community saying that this resonates with them. Like, they turned out in November for Evers, and this is something they're seeing, like, hey, he's getting what's going on here. So I think there's a message being sent, even though he knows it's not going to get done, it's a message being sent with this proposal. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, I think looking at going back to that women's health proposal too, both of these, the marijuana proposal and the women's health proposal, talk a lot about efforts to reduce racial disparities, whether it's in health outcomes or if it's in incarceration. You know, there's a study by the ACLU a few years ago that showed African Americans are a lot more likely to be incarcerated or at least arrested and charged for marijuana use than their white counterparts, despite the fact that everyone is using it at essentially the same rate. Mm-hmm. So I think that is sending a strong message.
So, and I think, you know, the thing that Robin seems to hang up on others is about the decriminalization, which, let's be clear, just because you decriminalize it doesn't mean it's okay.
Right.
Like, you still could have a traffic fine. It's compared to a traffic fine if you have it, but it'd be 25 grams, which we had somebody tell us, like, basically a pack and a half of cigarettes, roughly, of joints. That would be what, you know, the comparison.
Sure.
I don't have a scale with me. But Robin, you know, in his luncheon was saying that could get everybody high in the room that we had our lunch. I'm not sure about that equation.
Yeah.
I haven't tried that before. That said, that seems to be the concern for Republicans, is this is the movement toward full legalization. That's the bridge too far for them. Again, I don't know if they could have gotten medical marijuana, but I think Evers wants to legalize marijuana. I think he's there.
I think so. And I think it's worth noting, last session there was a bipartisan effort to decriminalize possession of small amounts. It was 10 grams instead of 25, and there weren't a whole lot of co-sponsors on it, but there were co-sponsors from both parties. So you have some people, I think, who support decriminalization of small amounts, but maybe aren't there on moving toward legalization in any way. And then you have people who are more interested in legalizing medical marijuana, but staying away from any sort of pathway to legalization of marijuana recreationally.
You know, one thing I heard this week from Republicans was Tony Evers is governing as more of an aggressive liberal than what we heard in the campaign trail. Maybe, but I went back and looked in the mid-October debate with Scott Walker, with the four panelists, I think the broadcasters at debate. I went back and looked. Evers said he favors medical marijuana.
Yep.
He favors decriminalization, and he's open to legalization, full legalization. He wanted to see some result of referendums. Well, we had referendums mm-hmm. in November. I think those referendums covered more than half of the state of Wisconsin residents. So it wasn't all, half counties, but residents. And they were overwhelmingly approved, I think, except maybe in one. I can't remember. I go back and look at that. Either way, Evers is doing basically what he said he was going to do,
yep.
at least when it comes to marijuana.
Yep.
Do you think he's being more, I don't know, farther left than he promised on this issue?
No, not at all on this issue. I mean, he was always there on medical marijuana, and he's talked about, I mean, healthcare was such a huge part of his campaign, and he's a cancer survivor himself, and that's one of the primary illnesses that people talk about this being beneficial for. So I think he was always there on that. Decriminalization is maybe too much of a nuanced topic to talk about a whole lot on the campaign trail, but, you know, yeah, he said he would probably support full legalization as long as that's what the majority of people wanted. And going back to that Marquette poll and looking at those referendums you mentioned, it does seem that that's where the state is heading.
Okay. So let's talk pure politics for a second. State Supreme Court race. I think this race is actually kicking off as of this week. I mean, mm-hmm. yes, it's been going on for a while. They've been raising money.
Yep.
But we've got a tax, we've got an ad, and we have endorsement withdrawn. So let's start with the ad, Brian Hagedorn, new TV ad. Talks about adopting a young baby that was addicted to opiates. What is he trying to do with his ad, do you think?
Well, I think he's perhaps trying to humanize himself a little bit. I mean, a lot of the early stories about him have been pretty negative, and this puts in a much more compassionate, positive light. But, you know, these races are always about how are you going to approach crime, regardless of whether that really comes up on the state Supreme Court. And so this is sending a message of, I think, that sort of tough but compassionate approach.
I've been told the Supreme Court, your best bet is as many law enforcement endorsements as you can, be in a robe. Those are the two things I've told the Supreme Court races you want to do. Well, let's talk about some of these issues that have popped up. So Hagedorn, we'll start with him because he's got the ad. There are three stories kind of we've seen the last couple of weeks. The first was about the blog post when he's a law student, in which he talked about Supreme Court decision overturning an anti-sodomy law in Texas, opened the door, in theory, to legalizing bestiality. He's pushed back that that's a legal argument, not a moral judgment. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that argument's really won out so far, though. The second has been about the school that he founded and still sits on the board, which essentially says if you are in a gay relationship, you can be expelled from school or mm-hmm. fired from your job. Mm-hmm. Also, if you engage in immoral behavior, I believe, mm-hmm. parents, students,
anyone.
Teachers can be yep. booted. There's that. Now, his ethics statements have shown also he gave speeches to a group that's been defined as a hate group by Southern Poverty Law Center. So there's a narrative being built by opponents that Brian Hagedorn is not going to give a fair shake to LGBTQ people. Is that a fair assessment of what's the argument being so far?
Yeah, that's the argument right now. You know, based on his writings and based on the speeches that he's given, and you know, there's been some comparisons drawn, but back to the Rebecca Bradley race where she had written some anti-gay things in college, and like, a difference in that race to this race is she said, I was a different person then. I don't believe those things now. I've changed. I don't feel the same way about gay people anymore. Brian Hagedorn is instead of commenting on whether he still believes things that he wrote on his blog, which was more recent than her writings had been, is saying this is an attack on my faith, and you know my faith has no bearing on how I would rule on a court.
So now with Neubauer, Judge Lisa Neubauer, the issue popped up this week that her husband, a businessman, owned this company, Crayons Incorporated, sold it in 2017. But there was a window from, I believe, starting in early 2010 where she stopped listing the clients of her husband's company. Mm-hmm. Said he wouldn't disclose them to her. And she was filing an affidavit every other ethics statement saying he doesn't know who he's working with. The Hagedorn campaign says it's a problem because you don't know the conflict of interest in cases she's hurt. How big a deal is that in your mind at this point?
Well, it's a harder message to communicate, I think, than having someone's own words. You know, anytime you're getting into campaign finance ethics statements, you've got a little bit more of a message to communicate to people. But I think you guys did some reporting on whether she had ruled on any of those cases. I think if they can find that she has ruled on something that she had a direct connection to or her husband had a direct connection to, that's an effective argument. A hypothetical is a little bit harder to push.
Yeah, so the Hagedorn, or sorry, the Neubauer campaign told us she never sat on a case involving Crayons Incorporated. Now, I don't know the extent of the number of clients because mm-hmm. there were hundreds of clients of Crayons. This is a general supply company. So, I mean, state of Wisconsin, municipalities, schools, et cetera. Then there's a parallel trying to be drawn to Justice Annette Ziegler, who was nicked for an ethics violation by the Judicial Commission, the Supreme Court, because she heard cases while she's a Washington County judge involving a bank in which her husband was an officer. Now, I've asked people, like, is there a good apples-to-apples comparison? And I haven't gotten a good sense that there people think there is, because they're saying, yes, Crayons versus the bank, that's apples-to-apples. Mm-hmm. But Crayons' employee are kind of... clients, that's like the bank's clients, and that would be a much, I don't know.
Yeah.
Plus two, thing I'm hearing is you're trying to make an argument about a woman who's successful on her own being influenced by what her husband's doing.
Yep.
Is that going to fly with voters? I don't know.
Yep.
So now, the third piece, and probably actually the most noteworthy, is the Wisconsin Real Association pulled its endorsement of Hagedorn. And actually, to be honest with you, they put the statement, I think, like late Monday, and nobody saw it until like yesterday morning
yeah.
or late Wednesday night. So they're pulling the endorsement, basically citing the things that have popped up that aren't related to real estate.
Right.
And also asked for its $18,000 donation back. Under state law, the maximum PAC donation gives $18,000. They want it back. Hagedorn folks say, yeah, we're going to give it back to you. Why is this important to you, or why is this significant?
Well, I mean, the Realtors Association traditionally endorses conservative Republican leading candidates. And, you know, you've been doing this longer than I have, but I've never heard of them asking for their money back.
So they haven't. Yeah, so they've never pulled an endorsement, which is interesting because mm-hmm. people said, okay, what about Bradley? You know,
sure.
They didn't back off of her. What about yeah. Roger Rivard, who had a comment, some girls rape easy.
That's right.
That, he was also a realtor, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was told, well, yeah, but the realtors dropped their independent expenditures for Rivard after that happened. And Bradley apologized, whereas Hagedorn's doubling down.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I heard this week was it's a bigger problem for Hagedorn if more groups follow suit. What does WMC do, for example, Wisconsin mm-hmm. Manufacturing Commerce, the state's largest business group? What does Americans for Prosperity do? What do big-time Republican donors do? Do they want to be associated with this, or do they pull the money? If they pull back, then there's a real problem for Hagedorn because the money's not there to match what liberals are going to do
mm-hmm.
for Neubauer.
Yeah.
Right, ballpark? All right, so let's talk about the stock market to wrap this thing up. So rising this, we had Eric Genrich, former state lawmaker. We both know from days in the Assembly. He ran an eight-way primary for Green Bay mayor, finished first with 44%. Pretty impressive for
yep.
an eight-way race.
Yeah.
What I was told, however, is the guy's running as a supervisor, has his own money. There's a group that has done independent expenditures for him in the primary. So watch. Can Eric get to that 50% when you have a bigger turnout in April?
Mm-hmm.
And also, what's going to come out from the independent group? And this other guy's got some money of his own.
Sure.
How's it going to play out? It's always difficult to project from a February primary to an April general, like an Apple. You know, it's definitely going to happen.
Definitely.
Chris Larson found out the hard way, challenging county executive ably
right.
a few years ago. That said, at 44% an eight-way race, a different number. Now, I want to ask you about the Madison mayoral race, because Paul Soglin, the incumbent, who told us last summer not going to run again while uh-huh. running for governor, didn't win the governor's race, and now he's running again, got 29%. And a former alderwoman, Sacha Rhodes Conway, got 28. So what's the dynamic there in your mind? That
yeah,
prior?
I mean, this is, I think, a lot more unpredictable than people were expecting it. I think most people that I talked to going into that race were thinking Soglin comes in with maybe 40%, and the other three who were running sort of split the difference. But she came really close, got on nipping at his heels. And, you know, I talked to some people who said, you know, if for an incumbent with the record that he has to be under 30%, he should be worried. You know, he said that people, after he said he wasn't going to run again, came to him, asked him to run. Other people have said they didn't really like the optics of that. So, you know, is that going to affect him? And what does Sacha Rhodes Conway do? I mean, there were three pretty strong candidates running against Soglin, and she was one of them. But, you know, that's a lot of votes to pick up that I'm guessing aren't going to go Soglin's way. But then also, like you said, the difference between February to April. Do people show up differently and when there are other races on the ballot?
I think liberals would love to see a very contested primary or race for mayor in Madison because it drives turnout, which then helps Lisa Neubauer, by the way.
That's right.
So for mix this week, we have Lincoln Hills. There's a bill being drafted as we speak that would give Tony Evers 6 months, maybe nine more, to close Lincoln Hills, but not the 2 years he wants. It also would, at least in this current form, it's not a done deal yet, put Children and Families in charge of the programming at the prison and then Corrections in charge of the safety. I just bring this one up because Evers has been, this has been a hot issue for a couple of years now. The problems at Lincoln Hills are well documented. Evers administration wants more time longer. So they said, no, we want this thing closed and closed soon. Let's get this done. Okay, we'll give you a little bit more time, but not as much as you want. Is there something else about that you want to add?
I mean, I think it's, this is maybe an actual example of compromise, because there's the question of how quickly can you do it while still doing it right and doing it effectively. And I think given the time and the argument and resources that it took just to get this to happen the first time, people want to make sure that it happens the way that they were hoping.
And for following up the Green Bay prison, Evers said this week he's not going to put that in his budget. The folks up in Brown County have wanted a new prison. It was built in 1898, the first piece came in online. It's on prime real estate in the village that where it sits right now. They could redevelop. They want to move it somewhere else, more efficient, fewer employees, all down the line. The challenge for Republicans now, from what I'm told, is to try and get that in the budget when they get a hold of it and then convince Evers they need to do it. The optic, though, Jesse, is that this is a guy who wants to reduce prison population. Yeah. Would he sign off on building a new prison while talking about getting more people out of prison for various programs?
Yeah, and I don't think he will. I mean, he has said himself this facility is probably, you know, not usable for much longer. I think he acknowledges that this facility is not going to work. But to be talking about reducing the prison population and sending fewer people to prison and then also authorize building a new prison, plus there's the whole debate over whether this is a public prison or a private prison. He says he wants to have that outside of the budget, and I think that's probably what's going to happen.
All right, so to wrap things up, next week, the budget, Thursday night, again, game one of the World Series, I think,
right,
Jesse.
I agree.
And before we wrap up, I gotta say good luck to the Vinehouts. Former State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, her home burned to the ground over the weekend. There was a fundraiser put up on Facebook. Yeah. They exceeded their goal very quickly, so best luck to Vinehouts. I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse O'Poyan.
That's Rewind for this week. Have a great weekend.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.